The way we view gender today is constantly changing, especially at the hands of the youngest generation. Gender norms are in a state of flux, and the rules inscribed in the patterns of our society are no longer set in stone. Offering a roadmap to the evolution of gender, the new book, Gender Explained, looks to outfit readers with gender literacy to better understand how gender moves freely in this new world. Psychologist Diane Arensaft joins us today to dispel myths and answer the most common questions that appear in their clinical practices. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Diane Arensaft to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
And it's a great pleasure to be here as well.
Give me an idea of at what point you thought the book was not only something that you wanted to do, but was necessary.
When I first thought about writing this book and co-authored with my colleague, Michelle Jerkowitz, we thought it would be a good thing to do. And now, as we reach the end of 2024, we realize what a necessary thing it was to do, because so many people are off kilter and confused about what's happening in the world of gender today, particularly among youth, that we were really pleased by the end of writing the book that we had the opportunity to try to explain what we've learned as two psychologists about what we say is the evolution turned into a revolution and a new zeitgeist of gender.
So let me begin with why we're off kilter. Why do you feel that we're off kilter? And is it really as hard as we make it out to be?
That is such a good question. Is it really as hard as it's made out to be? The answer is yes and no. In some ways, it's very simple if we open our minds. On the other hand, it's very hard because most of us were brought up on the bedrock that gender comes in two boxes, boy, girl, male, female, and that it starts at birth as soon as it gets recorded on whatever your birth records are, that you were born a boy or a girl. We now can even know it before we're born. That is bedrock. And now we have found that it's no longer bedrock, that what's on your birth certificate may not turn out to be the gender you know yourself to be. And that makes everybody feel off center, because it's not what was in their bones and what we always took as a given.
You mentioned at the end of 2024, which is where we're at here, and this book came out on August 6th. 3 months later, we had an election. And it certainly seemed that if there was a group of people who were vilified more than any others, it was the trans community within the context of the political landscape. Without being overtly political, but instead asking about the psychological, I guess this gets back to my initial question of why is it so difficult for people to understand? I mean, you get a sense that they don't want to.
I think we do get short-sighted or blindsided or have blindfolders when we see something that's very threatening to us. And I'm so glad that we wrote the book Gender Explained, because this is the moment when it's needed. You mentioned gender literacy before. So many people are what we could say gender illiterate, and they get confused. And that we have religious beliefs. We have also anxiety when something changes and we can't make sense of it, we attack it. And once we can make sense of it and know about it, for example, to know that people of all genders live very happy, full lives if people let them, and they are just part of the rainbow of humanity. So when we can get there, we can feel like it's less of a weaponizing attack on people who are different than us. If we are a person who is accustomed to living in the box that matched what we were told at birth we were, boy or girl, male, female, and that it stays there.
As I mentioned in the introduction about the, and you touched on this as well, about the youngest generation and how it is in their hands and changing. You write a chapter, Why Is Gender a Thing for So Many Kids? Talk a little bit about that and how it became a thing.
How gender became a thing for little kids, I think, goes way back. It didn't start yesterday. And we've just lifted the curtain so kids can talk about it and think about it more. But I'm recalling in the 1970s when I was in graduate school, and a group of us were going around to local schools in Michigan talking about gender roles. And this was a time when we were trying to emphasize that boys could be nurses, girls could be doctors, and so forth. And we went into rural communities and classrooms, and kids were really interested because they all were saying they felt confined by gender roles. And then we went from gender roles, and we then went through to a stage where there was a gay movement about who we can love. And then after that came a transgender movement about who we can be, who we know ourselves to be as male, female, or other. So it rolled out almost as a civil rights issue and also a living life issue until we got to this generation of children where they just took it one step further and basically, for example, said what a little child said to me, why does everybody think pink has to be a girl color? Don't they know it's just a people color? And so I think we've had a rollout from one generation to another, and they're picking up the ball now and running even faster, the young people.
Diane Arensaft is the co-author of the new book, Gender Explained. You write in the book about the gender affirmative model. Could you talk about that model and how it came about?
I would be so glad to talk about the gender affirmative model. As one of the people who was a co-constructor of that model, about 15 years ago, I would say, we started. We looked at how particularly children were being not helped when they were gender expansive. And at that time, it was known as conversion therapy, of trying to put kids back in boxes. And we thought, this is not the way to go. This is not helping kids. We can see that it causes harm rather than good. So what can we do instead? So we set up a model based on our own experiences working with kids and adults that basically said, first, that gender variety is healthy. It's not a disease. All the iterations of gender, that's a good thing, not a bad thing. And that we need to be culturally sensitive, but that it's a human right for every individual to be able to live in a gender that feels most authentic to them and have the opportunity to change it over time if that should be their developmental rollout. And so we came up with a model of care for kids based on those tenets and to help kids be healthier, happier, and live in the gender that they feel fits them rather than one forced on them based on what was on their birth certificate.
So once you set up the model, and you talk about this in the book, you say we naively thought we were pioneers. More naively, we never anticipated that less than a decade later, our straightforward model would create a tsunami of shock and outrage. What was it about the model, do you think, that especially in those intervening 10 years started to mount like the proverbial snowball coming down the mountain?
Here are my thoughts about that. If we look historically, we can find moments in history where there was radical change from what people had counted on as bedrock. And for example, when it was first discovered that the world was round, not flat, people said, that cannot be. I know it's flat. Look out the window. I can see it's flat. And it was very disruptive for what people counted on. And we go forward in history. We see a moment when the printing press came out and people said, this is going to be horrible. handwritten manuscripts are the way to go. And anything else is going to be the fall of humanity and give opportunities for people to read who shouldn't read. And we go to the Industrial Revolution. We can see the Luddites breaking machines. We come right up to this moment. We see artificial intelligence. Is it going to be a wonderful thing or dystopia? And gender falls into that category of something that feels so radically different, even though historically and cross-culturally, there's always been gender diversity in different cultures, but not in our culture, not in Western culture. So we're at a point now of, I think, a new zeitgeist, and we can say it's a liminal space. So our naivete, when we developed the gender affirmative model and thought everybody's just going to love it, was not recognizing that liminal space when people get really anxious and attack what's making them feel anxious, which is a change in the paradigm of what gender is and where it can go.
You make a point in the book that I really took hold of because it just made such sense, and I hadn't thought about it this way. But of one of the things that you learned is that gender is so difficult, especially for children, but certainly not just children, is one of the hardest things to put into words. So to try to explain it as you're learning it and understanding it yourself is really difficult. And I'm interested in the challenges you face and your practice of walking that line and trying to work with people as they figure it out.
So I am so glad that you asked that question, because one of the tenets of the gender affirmative model is, if you want to know a child's gender, don't tell them, listen to them. And then when it comes to figuring out what that is, how are you supposed to translate what they're saying? Because for all of us, sometimes it's very hard for us to describe why we know where the gender we are or even what that means. And for a little child who's trying to say, hey, everybody, you got it wrong. You think I'm a boy, but actually I'm a boy girl, or I'm non-binary, or I'm a girl, but I don't know how to show you, and I don't have words for it, but actually, probably I can show you better than tell you. So for little ones, we can watch their play. We can watch the things they stay away from, their actions. And that tells us a lot. So one of the challenges for us as providers and supporters of children in all genders is learning translation skills. And so we have to listen. We have to be able to mirror back to them what they're showing us rather than what we want to see in them. And we have to look inside ourselves to see when we are clouded by our own vision of how we think gender should be. And that's all a challenge, but I would say it's a challenge well worth it. And I call it taking the deep dive and getting kids' gender in focus. And we have to think about, you know, biology. We have to think about their core, what we call their core gender identity, who I know myself to be. That's in my mind, and sometimes we say mind, heart, and brain. And also how I want to do my gender, how I want to show it to the world. And it sounds very complicated, but it's really like weaving a tapestry and giving every child a chance to do that, or do what I call weaving a gender or spinning a gender web based on your biology, based on nurture, based on culture.
And oh, by the way, as you're going through this, you're also maturing and growing up and dealing with all of that, and all of that brings in school and your friends and your family, and the tax that puts on someone is just enormous. And I'm curious as to how you work and how you look to make that easier, especially on the person who is actively going through it.
I'm so glad you asked that too, Joe, because the tax would be much lower if we dealt with something that I call social gender dysphoria. We talk about kids having gender dysphoria when they feel stressed about their gender. But I would say we as a culture suffer from confusion and stress about how to understand gender. And when that social gender dysphoria is imposed on children, as we see it happening right now in bands across the country of pediatric gender care, it makes them very anxious and it ties them up in knots rather than opening up avenues for them to be free to be who they are. So how we have to deal with helping kids have the opportunity to live in the gender that's most authentic to them is for those of us who are practitioners, we have to get out of our offices and work with the culture to increase gender literacy, to help people with the anxiety and with the propensity to attack what feels foreign to you. For example, a transgender girl playing in a sports team in eighth grade that makes people very upset. If we can talk about it more and understand what's going on, I think it will help the kids feel more relaxed and open about who they are, no matter what their gender, and will help the culture settle in to this new paradigm of what we call gender infinity rather than gender in two boxes.
Dr. Diane Ehrensaft is the co-author of the new book, Gender Explained. Let me ask you, you write obviously a lot about parents in the book, and you have a chapter called What's a Parent to Do? So let me just turn that on you and say, so what is a parent to do, and where do they go for help?
Parents are so important here. No matter who your child is, in our culture, every parent is assigned two major tasks: to help your child be the kind of most authentic, best person they can be, and to keep them safe. And when you have a child who is gender diverse, you then have sometimes a conflict between listening to them, let them be who they are so they can be the healthiest person they can be, and keeping them safe, particularly at this moment in history. So what I would say, and I'm seeing it so much right now, is parents need all the support we can give them. And those would be the parents who are supportive of their kids being able to express and live in the gender as they want to. It would also include the parents who are confused or threatened by that so that they can get their children in focus. And I can't emphasize enough how much effort should be put into supporting parents right now in this new world of creative gender.
I know this is a general question and I apologize for it, but I mean, do the schools know what to do generally?
Schools have been the best of worlds and the worst of worlds for gender expansive, gender diverse, transgender, non-binary children and adolescents. A school can be a safe haven.
Right.
And I have seen schools do everything they can to make sure there is room for everybody in the school to be respected and honored for who they are, and you know, both around gender, around race, around ethnicity, and whatever else. And that is good fortune. However, there are some schools that have not themselves been taught gender literacy yet and make it very difficult for people who don't stay in their gender boxes. And children spend most of their day at school, so they are at risk at school if they're in that latter category of schools. So that's another piece of work we have to do, is really work with schools to make them a safe and supportive environment for children of all genders.
The name of the book is Gender Explained, A New Understanding of Identity in a Gender Creative World. Diane Ehrensaft, thank you so much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program. I so appreciate your work and your kindness in sharing your knowledge this morning.
And thank you so much for having me. I appreciate having the time to talk about one of my favorite topics.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Gender Explained by Dr. Diane Arensaft and Michelle Jerkowitz. It is published by The Experiment. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.